This is Aging by the Bay, here to provide families in the San Francisco Bay Area pertinent information about healthy aging practices and services. Your hosts are Michael Medeiros and Tom DeZeo of Comfort Care Home Care.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Aging by the Bay, where we talk about the joys and some of the challenges of growing older in the Bay Area. We talk to local experts, regional experts, and national experts about what they see happening as people age, as well as the services that are available here that you or your loved ones may or may not be aware of. I'm your host, Mike Mindaros, and my co-host, Tom DeZeo. Morning, Tom.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Doing good. Right now, looks like we're halfway done with the year. Can you believe it?
It's really gone by quickly this year.
I know. 2017 can just be here and gone just like that.
That's right.
But first, we need to thank our show sponsor. That's Comfort Care Home Care. They are the ones who make this show possible. Comfort Care provides the care you need in the best place of all, your home. Comfort Care, you can call them at 877-430-4942 or visit their website at comfortcare.com. That's comfortcare.com. To find out how one of their caregivers can assist you and your loved one to live safely and independently at home, Comfort Care is truly helping you live your best life possible. Tom?
Yes, Mike. So I'm happy to introduce today Dr. Michelle Petacolis. She is a national speaker and expert on the topic of loss, emotional wounding, and unresolved grief. She has a PhD in sociology, and she has over 18 years' experience coaching people through major life changes. She's produced the award-winning three-part documentary series called Secrets of Life and Death, and leads workshops and presentations for organizations throughout Northern California, such as UCSF, JFK University, UC Berkeley, Commonwealth, and Commonwealth Club of San Francisco. She's appeared on Voice America's Good Grief. And I welcome you, Michelle.
Thank you, Tom.
Yes, it's a pleasure. You know, we've done quite a few shows, but we have not attacked grief counseling and loss. So this is a new topic for us and very interesting. And, you know, I'd start out, Michelle, you know, looking at your website, I came across a phrase that really captured, I think, the essence of what you do and certainly stopped me in my tracks. And that is, death shatters the rhythm of daily life. Can you comment on that phrase?
Well, it sure does. And what comes to mind is, for some reason, 9/11. Remember when 9/11 happened and there was this huge tragedy? It brought the whole country to a stop.
Sure.
And, in fact, the president had to come back and tell people to go back out to restaurants and go back to museums, because that's what happens. It just suddenly breaks the flow and rhythm of daily life, and you realize how fragile and how temporary this existence is, and that what we all must face is our own end of life and ceasing to exist in this three-dimensional plane.
So your role in this approach, can you describe that for me?
Well, I see death as an opportunity to take stock of our lives, to remind us that we do have a limited time being alive, and that we want to make the most use of it, so that when we get to the end of our lives, we don't have regrets. In fact, we feel like we had a life well lived.
Okay. So one of the challenges that I see in this space, Michelle, is timing. Mike and I really emphasize families that are moving forward with managing elder folks. We really stress the importance of planning.
Yes.
You know, key component, right? If you're planned out, you're not going to hit the panic button and things aren't going to fall apart and you reduce the chaos, right?
Right.
So with loss and death, now, obviously I've seen before, you know, I get many calls that patients are on their way towards hospice and the end is near. And so that's a signal for families, certainly. But, I mean, should they be planning for death?
Absolutely. And those people right now who are involved in caring for their elders,
right,
they should be using this also as a wake-up call for themselves to not make the mistakes that older generation did, which is basically deny death and not think about it and not talk about it.
Right.
And then when they do that, they make mistakes that really have repercussions for those final days, months, hours,
right,
and how they're going to experience that, like whether or not they can stay in their own home.
Right, right. Well, have you seen a transition? I mean, the subject matter is a bit taboo for most people, right? Have you seen a shift in that?
Yes, I have seen a shift because I've actually been doing this for near 20 years.
Right.
And I have seen a definite shift. There's a lot more information out. You see this topic brought up in the movies a lot more.
Okay. See, I haven't noticed. You know, I haven't paid attention, okay? But because what happens is, my experience is, the minute I start to suggest to clients the hospice, it's the taboo. Oh, that means death. That means death is at the doorstep. And no one wants to talk about it, and everybody starts to clam up.
You know what, Tom? I don't experience that.
Okay.
When I come to the table and I tell people what I do, they are fascinated because the subject of death is like what the subject of sex used to be. It's very, very intriguing and mysterious. And when you help them to open up to the mystery of that, that creates space to then start looking at other things.
Right.
A lot of people aren't really afraid of death per se.
Right.
They're afraid of the journey towards death.
Yes.
That's the scary part, where you have to give up your independence, where you have to have other people taking care of your personal needs,
right,
where you lose your freedom.
Right. Right.
Right. Excuse me, Dr. Michelle. So just going off a little tangent, can you give us a background of how you got started in this? Because I'm kind of intrigued about, you know, how you're so passionate about it, but then how did you get started off with this?
My own parents, mm-hmm, who died back in 1998, about 6 months apart. My father from Alzheimer's and my mother from breast cancer. And I was totally unprepared for the emotional overload that hit me during the time of their dying. And I made a lot, what I considered a lot of mistakes, because I didn't know. And so I became curious. I mean, I could have had the choice of tamping down my feelings, which was my tendency before that. But something broke open. And that's what is so amazing about the grief of loss, is that it can be an opportunity to get curious and say, wow, this is so powerful. What's going on? And that's what happened to me. And that's what propelled me into making my films. And then the films had the life of their own, and they needed to get out. And the more I interviewed people, the more I talked to people, the more excited I became, because I started to see a different way of looking at death.
Right, right.
That's interesting. So, Michelle, how does one prepare? How do you prepare clients to take this journey?
It depends on where they are in the journey. I meet them wherever they are. If they're dealing with parents, then I help them to deal with emotional wounds that may be preventing them from being fully present, and then help them to have conversations with their loved ones. Sometimes there are problems with siblings, so how do they navigate that? But if it's after the loss, that's a whole different story.
Sure.
Then we're working on how to respond to the emotional overflow, this emotional overwhelm that comes from loss.
So maybe we should back up, and maybe I should ask you the question, is what is anticipatory grief?
So anticipatory grief comes up when you are in the process of caring for somebody who is dying. And depending on the character of that relationship, it's going to bring up fear and worry and emotions. And it may bring up emotions that, let me tell you, all grief is connected.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever is going on with you right now, it's likely going to bring up old stuff from previous losses. And so the good thing is, it's an opportunity to, when you have the skills, to clear out all that stuff so that you really have, you both have the tools and facility to deal with loss, but also you don't have any of that stuff weighing you down.
Right, Right. So when someone is moving towards a loved one with death looming, what should they be doing? I mean, what are the activities? What, you know, how do they move forward?
The number one thing that I tell people in that situation is to stay present. Present to themselves and present to the person who is dying. And that means first being present with yourself. It's like the old rule on the airplane is you breathe the oxygen first before you give it to somebody else. If you're not taking care of yourself, you cannot be present. If you allow yourself to get caught up in that medical industry, which will just take you, you know, it's kind of like a conveyor belt, only it's moving really fast. It's more like a fast-moving stream. You might not have time to stop and say, whoa, what's going on? So my major tip is to take a breath. Take a deep breath before you go through any door and
yeah,
check in.
That's an interesting concept that you bring out, especially the alluding to the medical industry, because what I witness, having come from the medical industry, I spent 25 years there, is folks don't have a chance to really make an informed choice on whether they want to accept the inevitable or they want to continue on. And I see this often in cancer where, you know, the poor person is getting therapy to the last few days when we all know, you know, you're not going to cure a stage 4 non-small cell lung cancer. There isn't a cure, you know, unless there's a miracle that happens. So what does one do? Do they make an informed choice of maybe this is not the right approach? Maybe it's back up and look at what we're dealing with, accept it, and manage it, right?
Yes. And when you make that kind of choice, those last weeks, those last days can be a heck of a lot more enjoyable, because then you spend time with your family and you spend time cleaning up old hurts and wounds, and you get to say goodbye. If the goodbye is, you know, when you're unconscious,
right,
that's not as satisfying.
Well, it comes back to that quality of, that's what you just explained and identified as a quality of remaining life compared to, you know, getting involved in things that are going to, you know, make you feel sick, right?
Yes, make you feel sick. And my mother was a really great role model for that, because she had the breast cancer, had metastasized throughout her body, and she went through three regimes of chemotherapy, and then she said, that's it, I'm not doing it, because
right.
It's ruining the quality of my life.
Right,
it's
right.
Not worth it. I've had a good life,
right.
And I'm ready to go.
Right.
And that model of making that choice of saying, oh, I'd rather enjoy these last weeks.
Right. Makes sense. Makes sense. So once you get to the point of a loved one passes on, you know, what time frames are we looking at for most folks? Is it 3 months, 6 months, 10 months, 2 years? I mean, does it go on forever, the grief?
It changes. First, it depends upon the relationship. And I have to say that quantity also is a factor. Quality is important, but quantity is also how much interaction you have with that person over the course of days and weeks. If they are part, they are, you know, incorporated in your daily life, you're going to experience that grief almost every moment after they're gone, because your brain is constantly going to become hit with the fact that they're not there anymore.
Right.
So that's huge.
Right.
As opposed to you see somebody once every 6 months.
Right.
It's going to be different. You may, you know, want to make a phone call and realize, oh my gosh, they're not there anymore. But that's different. So quantity really makes a difference. The other thing is what kind of a relationship it was. Sometimes people have more problems when the relationship was problematic.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's now no longer this opportunity to clear, to finish.
Right.
You know, so there's this unfinished business, and that can create a lot of regret and resentment and stress.
Do many people pull back then? I mean, I would imagine that You know, one alternative is that if you don't get any closer, then you're protecting yourself from that grief.
Well, that's what we're taught in this culture, is to tamp down your emotions. And yes, if I stay further away, then I'll be safe. But it's a lie.
Mm-hmm.
It's a total lie. What you do is you tamp down the emotions, and they stay stuck in your body.
Right.
And they actually can damage your health.
That makes sense, because sooner or later it's going to bubble up, right?
Well, and here's a little interesting statistic. So the Harvard School of Public Health did a study about the effects of a significant loss, and they found out that people who had had a significant loss were 21 times more likely to experience a heart attack. We're not talking double. We're talking 21 times more likely. And that held true even for people who were not at risk.
Interesting. Interesting.
So just a reminder, everyone, remember, you're listening to Aging by the Bay. We have our guest, Dr. Michelle Petacolis, and you can visit her website at www.secretsoflifeanddeath.com.
Yeah, I would add, Mike, also, Michelle's phone number is 510-529-4806 if you'd like to contact her. We're talking about grief and loss here. And I would imagine, Michelle, there's other types of losses. There's divorce. There's, problems in the family where you're not talking and you no longer have a relationship. Are you dealing with those losses as well? Or?
Yes, I deal with all losses because there's a similarity in terms of the physiology, what happens in the body.
Right.
And also what's going on in the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I work on, and basically you want to be able to release the feelings.
Right.
Because there's an energetics and there's a chemistry that's involved in loss.
Right.
And we want to release those so we don't have that heart attack that's
coming down. Right. So are there a lot of similarities or is it many differences between a loss of divorce versus a loss of death?
Well, certainly people who have different kinds of losses like to talk with and hang out with those people who are similar to them, because then they have similar experiences. But as I said, I deal with all kinds of losses. And when we are meeting in group, like on a group phone call,
right,
it's interesting how similar issues come up, regardless of what your problem is. Issues around fear, issues around regret, issues around resentment, how to deal with family members, how to deal with people who don't understand.
Right.
Those are all common.
Right.
The main difference is that we have some kinds of grief, like grief due to a death, that are more seen as more legitimate than other kinds.
Okay.
They don't give you bereavement days for losing a partner due to divorce.
Right.
Right?
Right, right. Exactly. So when do you see, what does a person have to do to really turn the corner? I mean, what are the signs and symptoms of they're back on the right path, heading towards acceptance and moving on?
Well, what they feel is that when they remember the relationship or what was the past, there might be this bittersweetness to it, but there is more focus on the gifts of that relationship.
Mm-hmm. So the positives kind of outweigh the negative of the loss.
Right. But there is always that bittersweetness, and that's the love.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're connected to somebody really deeply and that connection is broken, that's always going to be there. There's always going to be that little tenderness in the heart. And so instead of seeing that as, oh, I'm still in grief, that's the love.
Right, right. And I would imagine that the timing of that varies depending on the person's emotional state.
It depends on that. It depends on whether the person has the tools that can help them to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
We don't, as a culture, give people tools. We give them the wrong advice, which is things like, well, just move on, get over it, which is telling a person to tamp their feelings down, which is not what I recommend.
Right.
But I recommend a practice of releasing those feelings. And you can actually release feelings or release that emotional energy in 2 minutes or less if you do it right.
Okay. And let's talk about, you know, the physical, the emotional, the spiritual, all three of those elements, I would imagine, play a real significant part in the management, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. So when you are talking with folks who were decimated by the loss and are really grieving, are those elements wounded or not present? Are they absent? You know, the physical, emotional, and spiritual. Is it a quest to pull them together?
I always start where they are. And usually the first thing is the emotions.
Okay.
If they're in the midst of grief, that's what they're experiencing first, is this overwhelming emotion. So being able to hold the space to allow them to grieve and to teach them to focus on the sensation rather than on the stories. So it's actually the stories that are in our head, the, oh my God, I'll never get over this, or, oh, I remember those wonderful times, I will never have them again. And that stimulates in the body the emotional grief.
Mm-hmm.
So it's learning mind mastery. It's learning to master our thoughts, at least in the moment of allowing the feelings.
Right.
The other thing is to recognize that when we lose a person, a significant bond is broken. And we as human beings are social creatures. We are actually wired to bond. So when that bond is broken, that means this body is in a state of fear and survival mode. So we need people around us. Sometimes we need time by ourselves, but we also need touch.
Right.
We need hugging. We need that physical connection.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So, you know, looking at this issue, you know, traditionally here in the United States, we see the whole post-life activity of a wake and a funeral and those kinds of things that take place. Was that meant to really do what you're talking about?
It's important.
Uh-huh.
It's important to have those gatherings to create closure, but to create this whole sense of the story of the person at wakes and at, you know, memorial services.
Right, right.
We describe that person's life, and that creates a container for the loss,
mm-hmm.
and a meaning for the person's life, and that's very important. But for the person who's really close, and that's a significant loss, that's just one step. There's more, you know. That's just, it's important, but it's not going to heal at all.
Right, right. So what do you suggest? Is coaching and counseling in tandem with that closure a path towards management?
Yes, I would say so. That certainly helps. Or certainly support groups help, but if you have a facilitator who is proactive, that's going to move you forward as opposed to just letting everybody sit around and wallow in their stories.
Sure. Folks, we're here with Dr. Michelle Petacolis. We're discussing grief and loss. She's a counselor and coach that focuses on this. Her company is secretsoflifeanddeath.com. That's www.secretsoflifeanddeath.com. Her phone number is 510-529-4806. So, Michelle, we've covered quite a bit of material here. It's an interesting topic. I can go on forever on this topic, certainly, but your words of wisdom here for folks that are, and where Mike and I usually spend a lot of time is, it's families who have elderly parents who are moving towards the end. Any advice on how they should factor in, you know, this process into their game plan going forward?
When you say game plan, there's a lot involved. There's the game plan of the end of life of the person who's dying, and they're the star.
Right.
So you focus on what they need while taking care of yourself. But that's the journey there.
Yeah.
And to stay, be curious.
Yeah.
Be curious and savor it, because
right.
it's an amazing experience. And when you stay open and aware, there are amazing gifts. Later on, the plan is, how can I make my own end of life? How can I plan for my own end of life so that I get the ending that I want? What did I like about this person's death? What do I need changed? And the fact is that if we pre-plan, we're a lot more likely to get what we want than if we don't.
That makes sense. So reflection during the period is very important, and applying it to your own life might be a good idea.
You're going to do that anyway.
Sure. Well, great. It's been great to have you on. Very interesting topic here. We're going to have to circle back to you in the future because clearly there's much more to cover here.
There is, and thank you so much for the opportunity. I really enjoyed it.
Very good. Well, thanks again. Mike?
Thank you for joining us on Aging by the Bay today. Thank you to our guest, Dr. Michelle Petacolas, for joining us and helping our listeners age better. Please visit our website at www.secretsoflifeanddeath.com or contact her directly at 510-529-4806. If you enjoy this show and are getting something out of it, we would really appreciate for you to subscribe to our podcast and leave a review. We are wherever you listen to podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, you name it. Or you can listen to this episode or past episodes at agingbythebay.com/shows. A big thank you to our sponsor, Comfort Care Home Care. If you want to be a featured guest or if you have questions for our guests, reach out to us at info@agingbythebay.com. Until next week, everyone, have a great weekend.
This has been Aging by the Bay with Michael Menderos and Tom DeZeo, addressing issues on aging and services for the elderly community. Join us again next week for Aging by the Bay.